I'm not coming on your podcast to basically preach to everyone that they should go and sell everything and go out west, which is literally what I did, and then learn while doing. But there are opportunities in our lives to push against our comfort zone a little bit. It could be as simple as renting a camper van and you and the kids going on a road trip for a week, seeing how it feels. You're gonna feel uncomfortable for 5-6 days. You might realize you really hate it. You might learn something about it you really love. And then that expands your universe just a little bit at a time.
Welcome to the Reliability Rebels podcast, where we improve production by challenging the status quo. Your host, Armin Astani from Cherto Modo.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check.
Welcome to the Reliability Rebels podcast, where we explore how to make software and systems more reliable by challenging the status quo. I'm your host, Amin Astani. So today's episode is going to be a bit different because the guest is me. I've been wanting to share something I don't talk about much on the show, which is the life that I've built as a nomad. I travel North America, I live out of my pickup truck while running my business, Cherto Modo. Now, rather than just riff on this topic solo, I wanted someone that I trust to pull it out of me in conversation. That someone today is Stephen Townsend, host of Slight Reliability, where he makes sense of SRE and observability one week at a time. Stephen has interviewed me several times before on his show, and he really has a gift for finding the human element beneath our craft as SREs, so I knew he would do this kind of personal topic justice. So if you haven't listened to Slight Reliability yet, well, today's your chance. Enjoy the episode.
Today on the show, Amin Astani is back, and we're talking today about something very, very different. Now, Amin, we're just going to crack straight into it. So, well, first of all, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Stephen. It's good to see you, see your face, hear your voice. It's been a minute since we chatted last time. I'm doing great. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, it's really good to have you. And it's good to talk about something so very different and interesting than anything else we've ever covered on the show before, which is this concept of being a digital nomad. So
yes.
Before we go any further, what does that mean? What's a digital nomad?
Right. I mean, there's digital nomad kind of has a whole bunch of connotations. So I'll explain a couple of what those things are, and then I will explain what I do. So when people think digital nomad, they usually think of people that live out of a suitcase. They're going to places like Bali and working out of some co-working place, right? And maybe bouncing around from country to country in that fashion. What I do instead is I live in the United States, but I converted a pickup truck into a micro camper. And I travel around the country where the weather is good, where the company is good. And what it basically means is that I am not tied to any geographical place when I am living and working. Most of my time, I am spending it like during the cold winter months, I'm in the desert. And that is a really interesting, you know, way of being because you're off grid. You're not connected to, you know, sources of water. You're bringing your own, solar, that whole thing. I'm sure we'll have a whole lot to say. But when I say nomad, I mean that. And there's a growing, you know, community of people that do this. You might hear them as overlanders or van lifers. I am one of those people. And that is how I live and work on the daily.
It's amazing. I've known that you've been doing this for a while, as I'm sure many people listening do as well. So it's amazing. I've never even thought about doing something like that. And I guess, well, first thing I wanted to ask is, so you converted a pickup truck.
Yes.
Do people use sort of buy out of the box camper vans and things like that, which is sort of already designed for this sort of thing?
Well, so I didn't want to go with the camper van thing because, yeah, there's a lot of them. You know, you have like the ProMasters and the Mercedes Sprinters and all of that stuff. And they're perfectly fine, but they're also upwards of $100,000 American. And, you know, like I'm, you know, the genesis of this journey is that I started a technology business. If you go in past episodes with you, I'm talking about SRE. So I'm running a consultancy. So I need to run lean. So what I did instead is I purchased a Toyota Tacoma, which is like a very reliable, reasonably priced truck. And then what you do is you can buy basically a cap, which goes over the truck bed. But there's a really fancy one that I got from a company called GoFast, which opens up like a wedge. So in essence, when the wedge is open, it's like you have a second floor. And it's like, it's a tent, it's fabric in there. So you climb in there, there's memory foam mattresses, and that's where I am sleeping and working. Cause you know, the mattresses can be moved around. So, and now I have a standing space. So I've done work standing.
Well, so you can stand up there. You can stand up.
Yes.
Thank you. Wow.
Yes. You can stand up in there. So I've consulted for clients. I've done, you know, webinars, I've done Kubernetes trainings, I've done all kinds of things standing up in a pickup truck in all kinds of places.
Do you remember the moment that you decided that you can't live a normal stationary life? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. So I'll give you the beginning to the end. And it's kind of like linear thinking, but follow me. So 2022 October, many of us tech people would remember that is the date when the wave of layoffs started to happen. I was patient zero. I was working for Meta at the time as a production engineer. I was involved in their first round of layoffs. All the way in the beginning of this crazy economy, I was patient zero. So when I started to apply for work after taking a month off to, you know, decompress and everything like that, I noticed that other companies were starting to shut down their budgets, and they were reading the tea leaves, and they weren't super bullish on hiring new talent. So I kind of saw what was going on and realized, I think I need to do something different. The plan was to stay at Meta for 10 years, work my way up to director, and then leave and start a consultancy. So I said, you know what, we're going to start this game early. But here's the problem. I was living at Boston at the time. Do you know how much it costs to rent an apartment in Boston? It is the second most expensive metropolitan area in the country, second to only, well, maybe to New York. New York is there, and also San Francisco, so the Bay Area. So it's very expensive to rent an apartment. So I'm starting a business. I have limited runway. I'm trying to find clients. Paying $2,500 to $3,000 a month, American dollars a month, for rent makes no sense. So I'm thinking like, okay, what do I do then? So I started realizing that I've only lived in two places in my entire lifetime, which was the Boston area and also the Tampa Bay area in Florida, where I you know, grew up. And I realized, wow, I don't have a whole lot of life experience. I've spent a lot of time out in tech. I've done, you know, cool things at the job, but I couldn't tell you a single thing about what's outside of those two cities. My universe is so small. So there was something inside of myself emotionally calling me to do something completely different. And so what happened was, I was on YouTube and I discovered a video of this guy who bought a box truck, you know, like a moving truck, basically like a small one.
Yep.
And he bought it aftermarket, and then he stripped out all of the interior of the box, the cargo area of the truck, and turned it into a condo on wheels. Like, it had a shower, it had a place for him to work, it had a little kitchenette. And, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm like, this is kind of cool. Like, I could see myself doing something like this. And that planted the seed. But as the YouTube rabbit hole went deeper, I ended up running into a man named Bob Wells. And anybody who's seen the movie Nomadland, the guy with the big fuzzy beard, he kind of looks like a Santa Claus kind of figure. That's a real person. So Bob Wells was the original "I live in a van down by the river." He went through a big life transition. He bought a van, lived in it, and then started sharing his insights from that experience with people online. So I started getting into his material, and he's like the preeminent voice on this lifestyle. And I started thinking, you know what, this might actually be possible. And wouldn't it be cool if I launched my business while living in an adventure, going to places I've never been, seeing old friends that live in cities that I haven't seen, and kind of disconnect from the traditional way of living for a while. So that was the origin of this.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be straight up. Like, I am not brave enough, I think, to do what you did. I am, as a person, I need a lot of certainty and stability. And this, hearing you talk about this makes my buttocks clench because I find it very uncomfortable. Maybe it would be a really good thing for me to do based on that fact alone. But I think it's amazing. But I have a lot of questions. I wanted to sort of dive into more about that.
Yeah, but, absolutely. I will interject like just briefly here. I'm not coming on your podcast to basically preach to everyone that they should go and sell everything and go out west, which is literally what I did, and then learn while doing. But there are opportunities in our lives to push against our comfort zone a little bit. It could be as simple as renting a camper van and you and the kids going on a road trip for a week, seeing how it feels. You're gonna feel uncomfortable for 5-6 days. You might realize you really hate it. You might learn something about it you really love. And then that expands your universe just a little bit at a time. So you can start small.
Even a really small thing, sometimes changing a job just to see different people, different contexts and culture can make a huge difference to your work life. It can help your personal life as well. And
100%. Change is good. Change is good for sure.
Was it a big learning curve to figure out how to live this lifestyle? And instead, follow-up question, did you make any big mistakes in the beginning that you're like, oh my goodness?
I mean, the biggest mistake was when I left and where I went to initially. So I left in the middle of July, almost 3 years ago, and I went to Phoenix, Arizona. And for those that know anything about the United States geography, that is like the hottest time of the year. So I pull into an Airbnb. In the beginning, I was just going to Airbnbs. Because I was still driving a Honda Civic, and I'm trying to just figure out, like, maybe I'm just doing the Airbnb thing for a while. Because a lot of digital nomads do that. There's even like a short-term corporate rental companies that sublet apartments to you for the month. So I was starting there, but the biggest mistake was not going with the season and really understanding, like climate really affects you. And having your stuff melt in your car at 115 degrees is smart. So I did the crazy thing, which was I sold everything. I did not renew my lease. I packed all of my belongings into a Honda Civic and drove west. And I knew I wanted to go to Phoenix. I had friends there. We're going to go to a music festival, but I didn't. So I guess, was it a mistake? I was signing up for the discomfort of not knowing anything and accepting the fact that I didn't know anything and allowing those experiences to lead me to the next problem that had to be solved.
Mm. And so you've been doing this for three years?
How almost long? 3 years. It'll be 3 years this July. So it's almost May now. So 2 years, 10 months. Yeah.
I've got some more slightly esoteric questions I want to ask.
Yeah, do it.
As well as some more logistical questions about living in a truck.
I love it.
I'll just mix them up. I'll just whatever comes. I guess the first one is, what does home mean to you now that you don't have physical roots in one place?
Oh, Stephen, that is an amazing freaking question. Home is in people, dude. Home is in people. That is the biggest lesson. And listeners, I did not talk to him about this. He's a great podcast host because he really went to the heart of it. You really are tugging at the heart of the matter. When you live in the way that I do, the concept of home starts to dissolve because all of us think about, I have an apartment or I have a house. There is a community around that house. There is a job. There's a community around that job. That is home. Living solo, I don't have any dependents, and traveling on my own. Home is, I've learned, is in the people that matter to me that I go see. So for example, I'm currently spending some time with my friend in North Carolina. She lives in a house. I visit her for, a few weeks. It's great to have showers every day when you're doing that, by the way. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. But that to me, being here, spending time with her making me a meal sometimes, that is home. My partner, who's still in the Boston area, by the way, she is home. She is also home to me. She is probably the epitome of home to me. And I could say the same with friends all around the country that I do come to dwell in, and dwell with. So it's in people rather than in place when you start to live this way.
That makes sense to me. I also think it's interesting that even if we stay in one place for most of our lives, the people in our lives tend to change as we evolve or as we change jobs or, you know, are in different circles of people. And so, you know, our home also changes whether you're moving or you're not, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talking about your truck, you bought a truck and then you converted it sort of into what you wanted it to be. And was that a gradual process? How did you learn to do that? Have you always been good with your hands and...
Oh, yeah. No. I was a babe in the woods. I was starting from zero, an absolute complete noob. So like what happened was I was going in Airbnbs for a while and I went on a camping trip with a really good friend of mine who was an overlander and he had a Jeep and he kind of turned me on to the possibility of living in a vehicle because he does it like half the time with his partner. So I saw an example of it becoming possible. So I first started with just picking up the pickup truck, you know, off the lot, nothing going on, and just did some research on, okay, well, I can do a rooftop tent. So I found the cheapest rooftop tent on Amazon and the cheapest bed rack. And I bought it on Black Friday sales because it was cheap. And it came to the apartment that I was staying at. And I had to go to Harbor Freight and I had to go to, you know, insert a hardware store here. And figure out, oh, this is a torque wrench. Oh, these are the different types of wrenches. And some of them are in, you know, this measurement system and this one's in a, this measurement system. So I remember for like a good 3-4 days, knowing absolutely nothing. And then at the end of that period of time, I had a bed rack installed on the truck. And then I had the rooftop tent installed on the truck. And I had a thing. It was a dwelling. It wasn't much, but it was something. And that started this very, very akin to our tech world where we're doing these little tweaks. We're doing these little improvements. We're learning from going out and having experiences and seeing what works. So for example, it's nice to have cold beverages when you're out in the desert or if you're anywhere, if you need, you know, like you want cold stuff. So I bought a cooler. And then, you know, for a while, you're like, okay, you have to load the cooler up with ice and you're putting things in it. And that kind of works. But then you eventually realize, man, sometimes I'm out in places where ice isn't available. So I bought a DC powered refrigerator and I put it in the truck and everything was great until the little cheap battery system that I purchased all the way in the beginning of my journey, no longer had the necessary capacity to run the fridge. So what do I got to do? I got to build a solar battery system, right? So, and this goes on and on and on, right? So like, I'm like, okay, I need a solar system, right? So I need a few things. I need the ability to take energy from the sun and stored on a battery. And I need the ability to plug, you know, a alternating current power plug into something and get power out to run various things. And then I also need a plug that takes the DC plug so I can run the fridge. So I had to figure this out. So there's two paths I could have taken. I could have spent $3,000-$4,000 American and bought something off the shelf and it probably wouldn't have been, you know, precisely to my needs, or I could build it.
Amazing.
So I built it.
So you built your own custom built solar plus battery system that works just for your specific truck.
Yes. So I went to a hardware store and I picked up like a plastic bin that is basically the dimensions that would fit. And then I bought, you know, I'm going to start saying things that sounds very, very esoteric. You've probably never heard of these things before. Maybe some of you on the listening does. You need a solar charge controller that takes the power from the sun and converts it into a voltage that can charge a battery. You need an inverter that converts DC power from the battery into alternating current that runs things that you run off of mains power in your house, right? And you need all the little plugs and the doodads and the wiring with the proper gauges so it could carry the current, the amperage that is supported by your system. So I had to capacity plan. Aha, wow. more SRE stuff here. You have to capacity plan your system. So I'm learning all of this from the internet, of course. And I rented access to a hacker space in Las Vegas. And every night for like 3 weeks, I'm soldering and testing and tweaking and working. And then at the end, I had something that took power from the sun and charged up a battery, and I can run my my refrigerator. And it was awesome.
When we caught up about a week ago, I know you use Starlink for internet. And is there ever times where you are unable to connect?
There's two circumstances in which Starlink isn't going to work very well. One is in very dense areas where other Starlink peers are using it, which isn't super common. Usually Starlink is pretty good. But if you don't have a view of the northern horizon, so like if you're trying to set up Starlink in a forest, all the trees and the limbs and leaves and stuff is going to block the transmission. So you need open sky. That's like the one thing that is a hard requirement. So people that own homes in forests, they have to get a flagpole and mount their Starlink equipment all the way on the top of the pole to get it over the tree line. So that's the one disadvantage of Starlink, but I don't think I could be a nomad without it. Like, it's probably one of the most important pieces of equipment, you know, Elon Musk notwithstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is what it is.
What about plumbing, like water, sewage, and that kind of thing?
That is the classic question. It is the question. Everyone asks this question. All right, so let's talk about this. Water, you have to bring some. So I have property in the middle of the desert, an hour away from Vegas, that I camp out a lot. And it is off-grid. There is nothing out there. So you have to bring your own water. So there's companies out there that will sell you 5-gallon jugs that are meant for this purpose. So I have to bring my water out. As for, you know, the nature of sewage, well, there's lots of ways to do it. And I'll describe some of them to you and hopefully not gross people out. Like, there's some sophisticated systems that are called cassette toilets or chemical toilets, or the 5-gallon bucket with the plastic bag in it. You know, like, they're various levels of sophistication. As for me, when I'm out in the desert, 5-gallon bucket with the plastic bag in it. And then you bring the plastic bag and you dispose of it, you know, at a local like dumpster facility or trash facility, and you deal with it there. Right. So, because it's really important if you're going to be camping, especially if you're doing it in public land, you want to leave the land in a better condition than when you found it, because there's a lot of people that don't, you know, pack it up, pack it in. And the end result is that, you know, people like us are losing more and more opportunities to go camping out in really beautiful areas of the United States. So that's how I do it. I mean, people that are in RVs, they have their own plumbing in their stuff, but I went for a setup that is very lightweight, minimalist, utilitarian. So yeah, it's like, you know, like taking a dog out for a walk. It's just a human.
I've got one more truck question, which is, what's a small detail in your truck which brings you joy?
Oh, that's a really good question. Let me think about this. Okay, I'll give you a recent one. So for a long time, I didn't have lighting in my truck. Like, I had a little fan, and you press there's a button to give you LED light. But I recently wired the back with some LED strips, and even like have a key fob where, you know, it's kind of like a light switch where you press the light switch and the lights turn on. I know it sounds real quaint, but, you know, like when you're living this way, you typically don't have that. So I recently set up, you know, strip lights for the top and the bottom floors that's wired into the electrical system. And I'm able to, you know, when I set up the wedge and the Starlink and I'm getting ready to go to bed, I can press the button and the lights turn on. And in the absolute darkness, it's cool. It's like this little cozy, warm spot. There's light. That's where the home is right now. That's where you lay your head. You know, those little quality of life improvements. If you asked me a year ago, I'd say, oh, that fridge. It's so awesome. being able to go out into the desert and crack open a cold beer, you know, in the heat, like that's joy, you know, that freedom, you know.
You've already spoken about going through the desert. Now, and my exposure to the United States is limited to Houston and Las Vegas. So I don't really know what much about the United States. But are there any particular landscapes or biomes which are particularly poignant to you that you think this is a beautiful place to see?
So many. I'll give you the executive summary. Grand Teton National Park or National Forest. So in Grand Teton, there is a campground called Coulter Bay. And Coulter Bay is, well, a bay that is on this lake, which is Jackson Lake near the town of Jackson Hole. And they have a little beach there, and you can go out to the beach on this lake and look. And when you look, you see the Grand Teton Mountain Range. And the range is so gigantic, and the water is so blue, and the trees are so green. You could just sit there and look at this fresco, like this work of art that's called nature. And just, I remember being out there and just hanging out there for 90 minutes, just looking and realizing the scale of the mountain, because you see how teeny tiny the trees are in your field of vision, you know? Mm. So that's one. Badlands National Park. I remember camping in a boondocking area near the entrance to the park, and there's this big cliff, and you look out of the cliff and you see these awesome, cool, like rock formations out in the distance, and it looks alien and it looks crazy. And I remember getting ready to go to bed, and the sun's coming down, and all of the grass started to glow like a gold right at dusk. It was like this magical moment, right? And I'm like the only one out in this field, and it's just magical. I mean, even my own property, sometimes when it's dusk and the sun's going down below the mountains, below the horizon, if there's enough clouds, the clouds turn pink and purple, and it's like awesome. You get these sweet colors. So like, yeah, I've had that. I've been to Cinnamon Pass with some dear friends doing like a off-road thing and seeing mountain ranges, beaches. You know, that's one of the most wonderful things about being a nomad, you know, where you're on the road and you can go to nature and see these beautiful works of art that nobody had to paint. It was just there. All you had to do was stop and notice.
How about, what's a moment on the road that made you feel completely alive?
On the road or camping? I mean, if I'm thinking either. Okay, let's talk about camping. So I was mentioning my Cinnamon Pass trip with my friends. It was a 3-week tour of, you know, off-road mountain driving. And we found this absolutely beautiful camping spot. You know, it had like a little creek that went through it, where there was woods, there was a clearing, there was great places for us to camp. So one night I'm, sleeping at my campsite in my truck, and the weight shifted in the truck bed like this. The biggest black bear that I have ever seen climbed into the truck bed looking for a picnic basket, looking for a snack, with me just maybe a foot away from his head. You know, that really woke me up. And, you know, I'm like, oh, there's a big old bear looking for a snack, and I might be it. So luckily I thought fast, and, you know, I had my truck key, and I pressed this little red button, and the alarm went off. Mm. And then my friends were alerted to some shenanigans happening in my campsite, and, kind of came to my rescue, and, you know, we all shooed the bear away. But I mean, if you want to talk about aliveness, getting in close proximity with, it wasn't a brown bear. I'm still alive and standing, so it wasn't a brown bear, but it was a giant chonky bear. Like, this one obviously has made a living, made a career, a calling to steal things out of people's trucks. And look, to be clear, I locked up my food in the bear box. I was doing the right things. It was just the bear is habituated into getting into truck beds and finding stuff.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
We don't have bears in New Zealand. So I've only seen them on video, right?
Yeah.
So brown bears are very, very dangerous, and black bears are less dangerous, but still dangerous.
They're still dangerous. Yeah. So the way it works is that brown bears, grizzly bears, they can charge you. They're a bit more aggressive, and you do not want to be near them, and you do not want to interact with them. They're just, don't mess with them. Black bears are a bit more timid, skittish. If they see you, they want to get away. Mm. Now, there's two circumstances that can lead to a violent encounter. One is if they feel cornered, they're going to lash out. Another one is if you see baby bears, like cubs, you're in trouble, because if the mama sees you, they're going to go and defend their cubs. Yeah. So you, those are the situations where, regardless of the bear species, you want to get out of that stuff. So, but yes, grizzlies, they're not to play with. They are very large, very fearsome, and it's for real. Don't go try to pet them, please.
I've got two more sort of themes of questions to go through. One is I want to talk about relationships, and then I wanted to sort of close off with a few broader questions.
Yeah, of course.
So I'll open with, how has the constant movement of your life changed relationships in your life?
Oh yeah, there's a lot to say. I mean, the first thing I identify with is I have a deeper sense of intentionality and gratitude around the people that I see. Like, I know that tomorrow I am going to leave North Carolina, and it's going to be a little while before I see my friend. So I'm trying to be very mindful about the time I'm spending with her. I'm not, you know, on my phone and being elsewhere. I'm like having a conversation, connecting, all of that. So you do have this idea that time is finite. Your time is finite in the place that you're staying for the moment. Your time is finite in that interaction with the person that you just met or you've known for years. I mean, even with, you know, with my partner, you know, she has roots in the Boston area. She lives in the Boston area. So I spend as much time that I can there, but there is a season where I have to go because my rig does not support, you know, feet of snow. I would die. I have limits. So I have to go out into the desert when that happens. So, you know, I guess what the end result is that my friendships have become extremely important in this life. Like, people's presence in your life is a gift. Your presence in their life is a gift. And so, you know, I tend to be very grateful and very mindful about what I'm doing and how I'm sharing time with people living this way. You know what I mean?
I do. It's actually getting me really reflective myself. I mean, I live in a house, the same house with my wife and my two kids.
Yeah.
And like, there's so many times we are around each other all the time, but the quality of that time isn't always the greatest because we don't have that sense of finality where it's like, oh, they will always be there.
Yeah.
And then things happen, like a tragedy, like when my dad passed away a couple of years ago, and then suddenly we all come together. And it's like, why does it take a tragedy for us to find that, you know, that appreciation, that connection, and spend that real quality time together?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's I wouldn't say it's the con or the dark side of the two halves of the experience, but it is the sacrifice you make. You know, that you are wandering around and you're moving from place to place so often that you're not really able to place roots, but you do have the ability to connect with people that you haven't seen in years. You're able to, because you don't see people for an extended period of time, you are being mindful of the time that you have when you're with them. So maybe it's a bittersweet aspect, not a bitter aspect.
And so you have a partner and you don't live together. And how does that, is it working well? Are there any challenges with that?
I mean, to everything, there are trade-offs, just like in engineering. The pros, just like I mentioned, you know, the intentionality, there is an intentionality when I'm spending time with her. It's like every night is date night. I actually was having a conversation with her yesterday. Every night is date night when she and I are in the same place together. So like it's very romantic. It's like that's the really cool part, is that the time that we spend together is so intentional and fun, and you know, there's a purpose. We're not just hanging out watching television. And even if we are, it's like we're having an experience, and that's really, really nice. Flip side, I don't get to see her as often as I would like. You know, I can't live in Boston. It's just I'm trying to build a business and I'm trying to build a life that is different than where I came from. So, and she is a professional. She has been in her career for a long time, and her ability to just shift to that is not something she's able to do for herself, but we've made it work. Like, one of the cool things about what we do is that we travel a lot together. So several times a year, we just pick a place on the US map, and we just go. You know, in the beginning it was Vegas because I was based there and it was apropos, but you know, we've been to San Diego, New Orleans, Newport, Rhode Island, Montreal, and so on and so on. And so we're always checking out cool stuff, having awesome food, taking in the vistas, having cool experiences. So our relationship has, you know, turned into this series of adventures. And it's really fun and a privilege too, you know, to be able to do that. It's not the traditional. Nothing I'm doing in my life is traditional. I've completely departed all of the standard issue expectations that society has placed on me. I'm like, nah, screw it. I'm not doing any of that. I'm going to do my own thing. And it's given me opportunity to live my life in a way where I'm placing emphasis on the things that fill me up. And it's been good. Though, you know, sometimes I'm like, man, it would be nice if I lived in a condo sometimes, but eventually I get itchy feet and I want to move on anyway. So I feel like I'm in the right spot.
Well, I actually have more questions about this, but I'm going to, because of time, we're getting towards time. I'll finish off with just a couple more things just to sort of close this off. This is a great conversation, by the way.
Thank you.
The first one is, how has living on the road changed the way you think about SRE or DevOps?
Right? Oh, man.
What is it? Or are you just like exactly the same as it was before?
No, it's changed. it's definitely changed. It definitely has reminded me that it is a social exercise. You know, there's only so many things that you can do by yourself. Like, I consider myself a very independent guy, but over the years I've realized that I do better as a professional and I do better in my craft if I am continuously spending time learning from others, connecting with others, asking for help. And, you know, my approach to how I work is I feel a lot more collaborative rather than just inserting me in a situation and trying to fix it. And I think that is probably the biggest shift, like understanding that I am not an island. I am part of a community of humans and professionally and in the world of DevOps and SRE, that is especially so. I mean, I think that's one of like the main tenets, but living this way, I think really reminded me of that human aspect that we tend to forget because we're thinking about the technical shiny object AI stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that this life that you'll always be a nomad, or is this a chapter in your story which will have an end?
It's a very good question. So a very dear friend of mine who I consider a mentor, you know, she's joked with me saying that this is like Star Trek. It's the 5-year mission. But right now I don't see it ending. But what I do see is a sophistication around how I do it. There's places that I think I want to spend time in more. So I'm thinking of buying land in those places that I'm spending more time. So it's like a hybrid approach where I'm starting to plant roots in the places I know I'll be most. And then I'm still doing this annual cycle of traveling, but there are common places and certain places that I will go to spend time with the people that I really care about. So I'm starting to find those places. I don't see an end just yet. I mean, I just converted a 6x10 cargo trailer into a mobile office and battle station. So it looks like I'm investing more into this lifestyle. I'm not departing from it.
And actually, how's your consultancy going?
Oh man, Chernomoto is doing pretty good. I mean, I'm continuing to find more clients. I'm starting to find bigger ones, and I think I've really found my niche. Lately, over the past probably 6 to 9 months, I've been focusing a lot on assessing SRE practices, like looking at an entire company's reliability posture and strategy and trying to figure out what's working and what's not working. So that's been very, very interesting. I've also built some partnerships. There's a couple companies that I work with. Noble 9, they're a SLO as a service company. I work with them quite a lot in helping their clients. And then I also work with LearnKube, which is a Kubernetes training company. So I do Kubernetes training, and I also have an opportunity to meet, you know, people and look for clients. So there's been growth. It's been really good, but I'm always looking for, you know, companies that are, you know, in the incident response mess or are curious on how to level up or, you know, those types of pain points. I I'm always looking for people to talk to.
Well, this has been awesome. And thank you so much for just sharing about your life and these experiences that you've had. Potentially someone out there will be listening to this and going, I'm just thinking about their lives and might go on an adventure. So that's just such a, it's nice to be able to talk about human things.
Yeah. No, thank you, Stephen. I appreciate the opportunity. When I realized that this was a story to tell, you were the first person I wanted to ask me the question. Like, I wanted you to host this because I knew you'd be thoughtful about it. So I really appreciate the opportunity, and I hope someone is, you know, inspired at least to touch some grass, you know?
And we have talked about, I may be coming on your podcast to tell a different but similarly human story. So that's something for the future, potentially.
I'm looking forward to it. Yes, over the past year, I launched a new podcast. It's Reliability Rebels. It is not competition for this one. I tend to do things a bit differently. No, it's complimentary. There's a big world. We can take our own spot. So I tend to bring on guests that have contrarian views around reliability. We're talking about the human stuff predominantly. Lately, there's been episodes a lot about AI, but I'm trying to explore, like, is this assumption really true? What are the corner cases around it? And really trying to understand how our world is changing in software engineering. But it's been fun. And I think you are an inspiration in terms of, you know, launching this. So I guess you're like the logical godfather of the Reliability Rebels podcast. Thank you very much, sir, for giving me the motivation and idea to do this.
I'll put a link to that podcast in the description. Thanks again, Amin. It's awesome to chat to you and to everyone else out there. Hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll see you next time.
Later, folks.